Episode number 15. I'm your host, Adam, and with me is co-host Jordan. Jordan, how's it going?
I'm doing great, Adam. We get to talk about a Smallville alum tonight, so I'm very happy about that.
You couldn't wait, could you? You just had to lead off right with that.
I couldn't. I won't say who it is until we get into it, okay. But I'm very excited about that. So, yeah, how are you doing, Adam?
I'm doing good. By the time this airs, Christmas will have come and gone, so I'll have eaten plenty and enjoyed the festivities. I hope you had a Merry Christmas, all our listeners and everybody out there. And one of the things that we've been requested to do by one of the listeners is do some more of the DC animated movies. So we thought, what a way to end the calendar year than to do just that. And we're going to review at least for sure one of my favorites, and I don't know about yours, Jordan, we'll find out later, but Batman Under the Red Hood. This was really, and to do this we thought, why not bring in another guest co-host, because those kind of episodes have been working so well, and we're bringing in one of my personal favorite podcasters, Scott from the Suicide Squadcast. Scott, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. I'm so glad you guys have me on to talk about what is actually of the DC animated original universe movies, the ones that started with Superman Doomsday. Mm-hmm. Under the Red Hood is my number one movie of all of the current 30 releases.
Awesome.
So I am so jazzed to be here.
Yeah, this is a great one. Well, thanks for coming on.
It's not Batman and Harley Quinn, Scott.
Stop it. We've had this Twitter conversation. I will end you if I have to. I will.
You know, Scott, we'll talk off air about how much I have to pay you to blow him up on your show. I'll pay for that. I just want to put that out there.
Okay. Well, we charge reasonable rates on the Suicide Squadcast. I'll let you know.
We'll work that out after the show. But before we get started, I have to ask the usual questions I ask of all our guests when we talk about a Batman-related property, and that is, Scott, who is your favorite live-action Batman, and what is your favorite live-action Batman movie?
Ooh, okay. Favorite live-action Batman is Ben Affleck.
Okay.
And if we're just talking about a solo Batman live-action movie, then I'm going to have to go with The Dark Knight.
Okay. That's a great choice. I can't argue with either choice. Affleck is among my favorites, and I will, you know, I can't. We did an episode that will be up shortly about our, you know, we did a fan cast of the Batman universe and the Superman universe with all the different actors who have played the roles before. So I won't spoil the lead like Jordan does on so many occasions. But with his Smallville rantings, because that's pretty obvious who he chose for some parts. But Affleck was part of definitely in my top three of decision making for my choice. So I definitely love him in the role. So I'm in agreement with you. Before we usually do a news roundup, but there's not much news this week. So but instead the one big news release that happened was we got another reveal of characters from Titans, the live-action series coming from the streaming service, which still doesn't have a release date, and that infuriates me, because I just need to know. because look, at this point, they've got my money. Just tell me when and how much I have to pay. That's all I'm asking.
I'm right there with you. It's like, okay, give me a name for it. Give me a website to go to. And tell me how much per month I will be paying for this, because between Titans and Young Justice, I want this now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that they're doing it in 2018, so my wallet can get some sort of a respite from the holidays. But, you know, the sooner the better, because I just need to know. Like, I'm impatient that way. But the next two characters that we got after the great Robin reveal are Hawk and Dove. Hawk, of course, is being played by Alan Ritchson.
Aquaman!
See there. Look, I can't, I can't even finish a sentence without you, you know. I think you had too much sugar over the holidays. I think that's the problem. And
he has a problem, Adam. He has a problem.
He has several, and I've, you know, there just isn't a cure. We just have to put up with them as is. We love you, Jordan. We're kidding. half kidding. And in addition to Alan Ritchson as Hawk, we have Minka Kelly as Dove. Scott, you're the guest, so we'll let you go first. What do you think of these two costume reveals?
I am continually impressed by the quality of the costumes. I mean, granted, we've only seen three so far, but still, three really high-quality costumes. They look like the characters. Like, even if you didn't have Hawk and Dove in the name, show me that picture, and I know who I'm looking at. I mean, I don't even care about Hawk and Dove, but this picture has got me excited by just the production quality that apparently they're putting into Titans, because that Robin picture was hot. And so it's like it just gets me more jazzed about the show that I had, you know, I was excited for, but I'm going to be honest, I was more interested in the third season of Young Justice than I was for Titans. Sure. But the more I'm seeing these pictures, it's like my expectations are kind of on the rise for this show at this point.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's phenomenal. Jordan, what do you think of this reveal?
Yeah, I'm right there with Scott. I think these costumes look great. I thought the Robin one looked great. Now I think Hawk and Dove look great as well. I'm really excited to see Smallville alum Alan Ritchson in the role of Hawk. And I'm not real familiar with Myth Kelly, but I'm really excited to see her as Dove. Obviously, we got the casting announcements a while back, but you know, I'm getting even more excited to see them in the roles now that we have the first image of them. I'm a little bit surprised that we got this image before we got because we know that these guys aren't going to be part of the core team, at least at first. I'm a little bit surprised we got this before we got Beast Boy or Starfire or Raven. But you know, I'm hyped, man.
Yeah, for me personally, first of all, I never thought I'd ever see Hawk and Dove in live action. So that's just, you know, the fact that we're getting that is awesome in and of itself. The fact that the costumes for a streaming service show look that good and are that high quality is like the gravy on top. It just, like Scott said, you look at that and you know exactly who it is. If you read comics, I mean, the non-comic or animation reader or watchers will probably be like, who the hell are those two people? But for us in the know, we know exactly who those two people are. And they look great. And, you know, I'll reveal something on the show. I've had a crush on Minka Kelly for God knows how long. The minute they cast her, I'm like, look, I don't care. I don't care what the costume looks like. I'm in.
Okay, so I have to ask, if I too wanted to develop a crush for her, because I don't know who she is either. Uh-huh. I'm in Jordan's boat here. Uh-huh. What do I need to watch to develop said crush?
Well, Friday Night Lights was one of the things she was on.
My wife loved that show. I'll have to ask her about it. Who'd she play?
I can't remember her name. It's been so long ago that I watched the show. Or that I watched it. You know what? My friend told me about the show. And then I kind of tuned in off and on. But every time I saw her, so I'm like, all right, I'll record this episode. And then, you know, because there was so much on back in the day, back at that time, and it's not like we had PVRs and stuff like that. So, I had to pick and choose what I'd watch and what I don't watch. So that was a casual watch. But she was also in, remember the short-lived ABC Charlie's Angels reboot?
Short-lived, remember, as in it existed, and that's about as much as I remember.
It existed for one season, but she was one of Charlie's Angels.
Okay.
And she was also recently in another short-lived show. I don't know what I don't know what if that's an I don't think that's indicative on her. I just think it's the network. But she was also in Almost Human with Carl Urban, the cop drama, the futuristic cop drama.
Oh yeah, I wanted to see that simply because it had Carl Urban in it. So I'll have to. I had a buddy who said it was a really good show. He actually enjoyed it. And of course, that was Fox, and I'm so used to them canceling my sci-fi shows.
Yeah, I see. They make me sad. You know, they canceled Firefly.
Trust me. I go back to like VR5, Mantis, Briscoe County Jr. Yeah. I got cred back to the night. I mean, all those 90s shows that they would air like the hour before X-Files that just would come and go in like one or two seasons.
Yeah,
so many RIP for so many great sci-fi shows.
And I was so worried about Gotham, but somehow we've managed to get for Fox to commit to, what are we on, season four now? So.
Season four. And season four has been amazing. Yeah. I've been loving season four.
It's awesome. And Jordan loves it just because he likes to do that millennial talk, Scott. So he talks about that, you know, Batcat shipping stuff. when I think of ships, I think of the Titanic and it doesn't. So to me, it's like foreign when he speaks. But apparently.
I will say, though, my biggest complaint about season four of Gotham is that Bruce and Selina have pretty much not had any scenes together the whole season because they broke them up last season.
I don't care because they've been doing so good. I've been loving what they've been doing with the Falcone family, the pig. I mean, the way they did Professor Pig was fantastic.
Yeah.
He's been the highlight of this season for me. He's a character in the comics that I've loved. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Grant Morrison's run, but he's probably my favorite thing that Grant Morrison ever brought to the Batman mythology was Professor Pig. And one of the things that I love so much about Gotham is all these characters that I wasn't sure I was ever going to see in live action brought them. And Professor Pig, there was a moment in a recent episode of Gotham where he literally gave me Primal Fear vibes, like Edward Norton Primal Fear vibes, where, I mean, the guy Michael Cerveris just is killing it as Professor Pig. It's unbelievable.
You know what? Here's what I'll say about Professor Pig, and then we'll move on because this isn't a Gotham episode. But I never liked the character in the comics. I'm very 50-50 on the Grant Morrison Batman run.
Did you Beware the Batman, Adam?
Of course I saw Beware the Batman. You're asking me if I saw a Batman animated show? Hello? Do you know who your co-host is?
I guess what I'm asking is, did you like him in that?
Yeah, I just didn't like his portrayal in the comics. It never grabbed me. But Gotham is doing him very well. That didn't come out right. Gotham is portraying him in a very solid and unique way. I corrected myself. Let's get into the movie where we promised we'd talk about. So, Jordan, do as you always do. And give us that brief, ever so brief, description of the film.
All right. Are we thinking one sentence or two sentences this time?
Okay. Well, because where are you going? IMDb.
Yeah, as always.
Yeah, I'm gonna say one sentence because you know.
All righty. Hey, Adam, we got two sentences this time from IMDb.
Thank God I didn't put any money on that.
There's a mystery afoot in Gotham City, and Batman must go toe-to-toe with a mysterious vigilante who goes by the name of Red Hood. Subsequently, old wounds reopen, and old, once-buried memories come into the light.
Wow, that's actually impressive for IMDb. I got to give him credit for that.
That's actually a decent one. I mean, I remember I had to go to an IMDb once to get a decent summary for Mask of the Phantasm on another show I was on, and that's... You know, you can be hit and miss, but that's a solid summary for this movie.
It is indeed, yeah.
I remember that was when you were on I Love That Movie. Is that right, Scott?
Yeah, I had to swoop in because Lisa found this awful summary, and I was like, that does not sound like the movie I just watched.
That's too funny. So, Scott, we're gonna get right into it. The movie came out when? When did the movie come out, Jordan?
2010.
10? Okay. So yeah. The movie is now 7, soon to be 8 years old, people. We're over the spoiler wall, so let's just get that out of the way. So, Scott, hit us up with some of what are the things that you liked about this film? Give us your likes.
Oh, my God. Just the sheer drama in the movie. I mean, I will tell you this, and I'm going to skip right to the end of the movie. The ending of the movie makes me freaking cry every time.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, but that I think plays into one of my biggest likes is that they played this real. they played this dramatically. I mean, you get so invested in the characters that by the time at the end you get that flashback to little Jason saying, "This is the best day of my life." Yeah. You're just like, "Oh, Jason, what's gonna happen to you?"
Yeah, it's true. No, that and see, the thing you said about playing it straight, like, yes, this is an animated show, but by no means is it a cartoon or an animated movie. But by no means is it a cartoon, and I think that sort of speaks to what you're saying.
I mean, this is back in those early era where we still had Andrea Romano as the voice director on these movies.
Yeah, and she's phenomenal.
And she's phenomenal, and I mean, and she gets such great performances. I mean, you got to give me credit. They get Bruce Greenwood as Batman.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sorry. I will stand Kevin Conroy till the day I die. I've loved that man for, you know, since I was 10. But Bruce Greenwood did such a good job that when Brandon Vietti, the director of this film, went on and became a co-showrunner in Young Justice and brought Bruce Greenwood over as the voice of Batman for Young Justice, I just went with it because I was like, well, if you can't get Kevin Conroy, I'll take Bruce Greenwood, because that was an amazing performance.
And you know what's interesting about that? I thought that his inflection in this was slightly different than his inflection in Young Justice. Like, this had the more – he wasn't copying by any means, because it didn't sound like a parody by the time – he had a Christian Bale vibe, but not like the parody version that we heard in Dark Knight Rises, where it almost became a joke of itself. But, you know, it was not as gravelly as Bale, but it was going in that direction. You know what I'm
there's
saying?
There's a scene at the beginning of this movie. Maybe, I mean, this scene is one of the coolest. I think it's one of the coolest sort of Batman sort of chasing after thugs scenes that we've ever really gotten. When the thugs are driving the truck and he comes and he sticks his hand through the window. There's a scene, there's a line that he delivers right there that really reminded me of Bale. But I definitely echo your thoughts in that Bruce Greenwood is a phenomenal Batman. I loved him in this. I loved him in Young Justice. He honestly, in my opinion, I put him on a pretty level playing field with Conroy. I think he's one of the best Batman voice actors we've ever gotten.
I would agree. I think the line you're going for is, if you keep on lying to me, running headlong into a wall will be the least painful activity of the evening.
Yeah. That's exactly it. I loved it. It was great. Good impression, by the way. That was good. You should hear Jordan's impression of Bale. It's truly a bastardization, but no. We won't get him to do it because I'm sure Bale will sue us at some point. But let's speak.
That's coming up on a future episode, I think, Adam, because I don't think we've released that yet as of this. But the listeners will hear that.
I've already heard it, and my eardrums are still sore. But let's speak to that. One of the things I'll lead you guys into talking about. One of my likes is the fact that this movie is it's an adaptation of the storyline of the same name in the comics. I think Chuck Dixon wrote it. Am I correct in that?
Judd Winnick.
Oh, Judd Winnick. Sorry, I don't know why I was thinking of Chuck Dixon for some reason.
Under the hood in the comics.
The name is slightly different. But one of the things I liked was there was a lot of elements from that story that were transplanted to the film, but it also uniquely managed to weave its own you know, story beats into it that made it unique. So it wasn't as if you're just watching a straight up copy of the printed page. Like there was obviously pages ripped right out, but it was unique enough. Like for example, the Amazo stuff and the amount of Nightwing, him working together with Nightwing that we got. I like that dynamic. So I thought it did a really good job of balancing, you know, being an adaptation, like a strict adaptation, but also bringing enough new elements to the table that kept everything fresh.
I think what's interesting is that you had Judd Winnick, who wrote the arc in the comics, adapting it himself. But then when you're adapting it as a standalone movie, there's a certain level of exposition you have to give to a new viewer. So, and you know what those moments are. You see the, you know, that's Nightwing. He was the first Robin.
Yeah.
Oh, or,
yeah.
Or the little flashback that explains how the Lazarus Pit works. Or, you know, there's just little tidbits here or there. Or the very fact that, you know, you get the cold open that's basically the 5-minute version of Death in the Family. Yeah. That totally telegraphs the fact that the Red Hood is going to be Jason. But it works for, like, in the comics. Now, you have to forgive me. I've actually never read the comic arc. I haven't gotten to that point yet. I've only seen the movie of this arc, but I've been led to believe that in the comics with the Under the Hood arc, it was much more of a mystery of who was under the hood. And the movie pretty much kind of tells you at the beginning by showing you the death of Jason that, yeah, Jason's the Red Hood.
It is definitely a mystery. And that kind of starts with, you know, they sort of tie the death of, or the fact that Jason Todd might be alive there. I think there's a nod to it in Hush.
In Hush, it's Clayface that's but there's posing
a,
as
it lays the groundwork for the idea that, hey, Jason Todd, it was sort of foreshadowing what we're gonna get, because this story came after Hush.
Yes, and that's what Hush was actually trying to do, was to set that up without Superboy Prime having to punch a continuity wall to bring Jason back.
Definitely. But and then the other thing I like, you mentioned it, Scott, was the Death in the Family arc, and it really is a truncated version. Definitely, there's no doubt about that. But I think they gave you what was pertinent from that story, so that that enough of it would fit to be able to transplant this story. I think they gave you just enough, and I personally love the way. The way that the death of Jason and the beating that the Joker gives him was filmed. I mean, the different cuts, and you see the shadow on the wall of the Joker beating him. So it was very creative the way they showed it. And I think the way they got away with the PG-13 rating. Do either of you guys want to speak to that?
Oh, it's brutal. That first scene, I think it's one of the more brutal Joker scenes that we've ever seen in animation. I mean, they really did get away with a lot with that PG-13 rating. And I mean, that scene is just, and the tension in that scene is what's really poignant to me. I mean, you see Batman racing, trying to save him. You hear Ra's al Ghul talking about, oh, he's not going to make it. And Batman gets there just a second too late. Before the building blows up. And I think that, well, I was going to get into this later, but I'll talk about it now as long as we're on this scene, is John DiMaggio's Joker made up for his Aquaman performance for me. His Joker is so good. I, again, like I said, I'll put Bruce Greenwood right next to Kevin Conroy. I'll put John DiMaggio right next to Mark Hamill. His Joker, he's not doing – okay, listen, I love Troy Baker's Joker, but let's be honest, he's doing a Mark Hamill.
Oh, he's totally doing a Mark Hamill. I will – oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, and it's like John DiMaggio –
It's like Brandon Routh in Superman Returns. He's doing a Christopher Reeve.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but what I think is so cool is John DiMaggio does something totally unique, totally different. To me, it feels it's got a little bit of the sort of a little bit more of the whimsical thing that Hamill does, I guess you could call it, but it's also got there's elements that remind me a little bit of Ledger in John DiMaggio's voice performance as the Joker.
Oh yeah,
and. His performance is just incredible, and the sort of taunts he's giving to Jason as he beats him is just, I mean, it's really brutal to watch, but that scene is just, it's phenomenal, and it's such a tension filled and basically start to the movie. So
yeah, I love the scene. Now that you brought up the Ledger comparisons, I love the scene with Batman and the Joker. I think it was in Arkham when he's sitting across he's sitting at the table and Batman's standing at the other end of the table. And then, you know, Joker's taunting him about basically said something to the effect of bringing back the fact that he killed Jason Todd. And Batman just like throws him against the wall and was about to beat the crap, you know. It echoed the Dark Knight scene for me. And I think, obviously, I think they were doing it on purpose, personally.
While you bring it up, the other line I loved from the Joker was when he said, I'm going to need some guys, but not these guys, because they're sort of dead.
Oh, that was when he attacks.
That was with Black Mask. But I was just as long as you were bringing up Joker lines from the movie, that was another one that really stands out to me with John DiMaggio.
I mean, he kills him with a water glass. I mean, that's pretty.
Well, I mean, yeah, he slices the one guy's throat with a water glass, takes the gun out of his belt, and then shoots the rest of them. I mean, all of these movies, ever since Superman Doomsday, all of these movies have been rated PG-13. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until, like, Killing Joke and Justice League Dark that we started getting R-rated movies. But some of these, like, they walk the line of what you can get away with in a PG-13 movie.
This pushed the envelope for sure.
Oh, well, and that was my point, is that, like, there were some moments that were shocking to me with all these releases, even back to Superman Doomsday in 2007. But I remember this was the movie, just, like, from start to finish, that I was like, oh. You know, like, it was like, we're doing this, are we? You know, with some of the language and some of the violence, not that I disapprove of it, but just the fact that I'm getting it from an animated movie, and I'm just like, well, okay, then. This is what we're doing.
Yeah. Usually what I do is, because I have nephews and nieces, usually before I recommend any of these animated, before I let my nephews or nieces see any of them, I'll watch them. And then if they're okay, you know, I'll recommend them to my sister or my brother-in-law to show the kids. As soon as I saw this one, I'm like, okay, this is a no. definitely off the list. No, not going to happen.
Oh, no, as I was trying to rewatch it.
Fun for me, not for you.
Yeah, I was rewatching it today, and my 4-year-old was around, and I was like, hey, you want to go watch something on my iPad in your room? He's like, okay. It's like, thank you.
It's nice when you can still fool them, and it's that easy. It's like, oh, yeah, here's something distracting. Go.
Yeah, because the level of violence, I mean, yeah, and it's not even gratuitous,
no.
but it's just intense. Like, yeah. Even the implied violence is, I guess, shocking is not really the word, but, you know, because we've seen worse since then. But back in 2010, it was like, okay, then. Wow. All right.
Yeah, it was shocking for sure. And you know what the cool thing about – not only what the Joker was saying and doing that made him, you know, frightening definitely, but also the reverence and the fear that both Ra's al Ghul and Black Mask had for, like, both of them basically, like, he's uncontrollable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the scene on the bridge when he basically is kidnapped the Black Mask and all his goons, and he's pouring gasoline on him and trying to get that Zippo lighter to light. It's just like, I did find myself laughing. It's that gallows humor that goes, okay, this is kind of funny.
It is, because they're all scared, you know, they're all crapping their pants at the mere thought of him, let alone when they actually confront them, right? So I love the way that they further, if you didn't get it by what you were seeing, the way the other villains treated and talked about the Joker really reinforced how dangerous he really was, and I appreciated that.
It reminds me of the line from the – I think it was just in the Killing Joke movie. I don't think it was in the actual comic, but where Batman's interrogating that guy, and he goes, you know, we're scared of you, but we're terrified of him, talking about the Joker.
Right. What did we think of the – what did we think of the way Black Mask was brought about in this film? What were you guys' thoughts on him?
I think he's hilarious.
Yeah.
I think he – it's interesting because he's not the kind of Roman Sinus that, you know, is like the cultured guy who's like, you know, the son of an industrial – you know, it's not kind of like the Godfather. It feels more kind of like Scarface. More Al Pacino, like I worked my way up. I'm the boss, and I worked my way up from the streets. I wasn't born into this. So he's got that sort of very sort of brash, obnoxious, ugly American kind of way of talking and treating. So even his assistant, you know, even when he was like, "We're gonna throw a party," that means I want a lot of guys to kill him. And the assistant was like, "Yes, sir. I figured that's what you meant." So just as his brashness, sort of his blue collaredness, I found very entertaining and almost a dark comic relief in the movie with just how clueless he was and how he was just getting played by everybody in this movie.
The scene that always cracks me up with Black Mask is, you know, he literally just goes down the line and punches every single one of his henchmen. I will say I loved a lot of the ways that Black Mask was written in the movie, but I wasn't real impressed with Wade Williams' voice performance, because for me, I'm a huge fan of the character of Black Mask. I've talked about it on this show so many times that the animated series The Batman was the show that made me a diehard Batman fan.
Sure.
And James Remar's performance in Black Mask turned Black Mask into one of the best villains in that show's run. And so for me, whenever I see Black Mask, the only voice I can hear is James Remar. I feel like a lot of people have this issue with Mark Hamill's Joker, and they have trouble accepting other versions of the Joker. For me, it's that way with Black Mask, with James Remar. So when I hear Wade Williams' version, which is very different from James Remar's version, and I'm like, when I read a comic book with Black Mask, I always hear James Remar. So when Wade Williams, didn't really do it for me as the voice of Black Mask.
That's fair. I mean, he was good, but I think, you know, of all the performances, I think he definitely doesn't steal the show the way Greenwood and you know, DiMaggio and even Jensen Ackles. Let's talk about, you know, first of all, the Red Hood in general. I loved the scene where he brings the head of the lieutenants of, you know, to the other mob bosses. He's like, here, I did this in 2 hours. Imagine what I can do. I thought that was, again, it just goes to Scott's point of the violence, the sheer violence of this whole thing. I thought that was, it literally shocked me. I was like, oh, okay.
And I love that you don't see the heads, but you just see that one guy vomit. Yeah, it's like that.
Oh, that's, and you see the blood stain on the top of the bag.
Yeah.
No, it's not red, it's black, but it's like, ooh, I know what's in there. Is oh yeah, yeah, this is where this is going.
But you know what it is, for sure.
You know what it is. But that's what I like, is it's subtle. It's like, yeah, there's a smear at the top of that bag. Yep, that's blood.
I love the way Jensen Ackles did the voice. It wasn't, because a problem with using somebody like Jensen Ackles, who's so familiar on, I know Jordan wants to say Smallville, but Scott and I are the same people in the room, and we refer to him as
Dean Winchester.
Yes. And, you know, as Dean Winchester, he has that gravelly sort of gruff vocal performance. It was definitely toned down in this. Like, it's not like I was sitting there listening to it and thinking, okay, there's Dean Winchester. You know what I mean?
I was totally on board with this performance even back in 2010.
Yeah.
Because I'm gonna be honest, I hadn't seen Supernatural at that point. I'm going back and kind of catching it like on binge watching.
Oh, okay, I see.
But I knew who Jensen Ackles was. But listening to his vocal performance, I was like, I'm totally digging this. He's got that sort of smartass attitude that's just kind of like, seriously?
Yeah.
This is what you thought you were doing? Like he just knows he's the baddest, you know, mother you know what in the room, and he's not going to take it from anybody. And I just love the attitude that he brings, that he just has that great – he just has some of that great line delivery of, like, cute.
And I love the scene. There are two scenes – well, many scenes, but two in particular I want to highlight were the one where you actually see him and Batman partnering up.
Yes,
that was so good to see, just for that brief moment, because it, like, the fact that when you see how they were so in sync and how they were not the ridiculous 90s boy band that is actually for any of the millennials or anybody else prior to that listens to this podcast, I'm not talking about the boy band. It's actually a term. Jordan, in case you liked NSYNC, I'm talking to you too. it was just the way they, you know, their motion, their fluidity, the way they work together. It was just a nice thing to see, given that, you know, they were kind of at odds throughout most of the movie. It was a nice callback to their past heyday as Batman and Robin. And I even like, one of the things I really loved about this film was the use of the flashbacks to his time as Robin.
Yeah, I love the fact that it was very non-linear.
Yes.
And it was sprinkled in. It was sprinkled in a way that it was kind of like a need to know for the audience. Yes. Like, they're treating the audience like they don't know any of the stuff. So they're going to wait to show you that information you need at the point that dramatically it's going to have the biggest punch, or it's almost more realistic in that something happens and it brings about a memory.
Yeah.
And so the memories don't have to be told in sequence. You're they basically trust you to be an intelligent audience member and put the pieces together as the movie goes on.
I found it to be very much like the way Batman Begins did it, or the way Man of Steel did it. I thought,
yes,
yeah, you know, that it really reminded me of that. And the ones that I mean, like when you see him, like, so you see him, you know, stealing or removing the tires or trying to steal the tire from the Batmobile. So you see that iconic moment. Then at the end of the film, like you mentioned, you see the part where he's trying on the costume for the first time. You then see sort of the early days where they fought together when Jason was far younger, and it had almost like even the animation style changed a little bit. It kind of looked Batman 66-ish. It was kind of a nod to that, you know, with the Riddler.
Yes. You know. Yeah. The old, we're robbing a museum.
Yeah, exactly. And they were actually in a museum, which was like, oh, there it is. They're going right for the nostalgia heartstrings. And then obviously when he was older and more, you know, even more brash and more, you know, God forbid he actually follows Batman's instructions.
That's a scene pulled straight from the Jason Todd era of comics too.
Yes.
Like this movie, being it, even though it is adapted from an arc, it pulls from so many other arcs in comics history. Like Judd Winnick went through and like, okay, I have to fill you in on everything that you're going to need to know. Like, I'm going to write this to be a standalone movie. So it's like, here's this stuff from those early issues of Batman right before Death of the Family. And we're going to give you Death of the Family. And we're going to give you a little hint to Killing Joke. You know, when he talks – when Jason refers to, you know, friends crippled, and we all know who that means.
Yes.
You know, and it's a little wink, wink, like – we're not going to tell you, but if you know, you know. And so it was amazing how it was like just sort of pieced together from all these moments in comics to tell this nice standalone 75-minute story. I mean, even to the point that, you know, you talked about Batman and Red Hood briefly fighting together. I think that's why it's so important. Like you said, that Nightwing didn't play that big of a role in the arc in the comic, but I feel like you needed to see Batman fighting with Nightwing to kind of compare to how he fights with Jason, to say, here's him with one former Robin and here's him with another former Robin. And kind of you can compare his interactions with Dick and with Jason.
Yeah, and it's cool to see that dynamic for me, because Batman is very different when he's by himself as to when he's with a partner. Like his dynamic, his demeanor changes. So I think that's very important to showcase. And so I enjoyed those elements for sure. One of the things I definitely want to call back to is that, you know, what you mentioned, Scott, about the ending, the end scene in the warehouse there, you know, when he's got the Joker and he says to Batman, you have to make a choice. It's him or me. I mean, that, again, you said you were talking about crying. I was bawling, especially when he's like, when Jason's like, he said something about you can't. When Batman was trying to plead with him not to kill him or whatever, and he's like, it's not about that. It's about, he goes, because if he did this to you, because I think Batman was trying to say something, or Batman was trying to tell, you know, Jason that, you know, I'm sorry for abandoning you or whatever, or not being able to save you. And then Jason was like, it's not about that. If he had done this to you, I would have killed him. You know what I mean? The whole banter and the way the vocal performances from the actors, it was so powerful. Legitimately, It couldn't get more real or emotional as if two live action actors were standing there performing the sequences.
It's the line that Jensen Ackles performs, that it's like, it's not the fact that I died. I forgave you for that years ago. It's the fact that you let him live.
Yeah, exactly.
And the part in particular, Jason says something to the fact of, because he took me from you, and he says something to that effect. Yeah. Like And so that's what's always he's like, if he had done the same thing, if it had been the other way around, that he would have scoured the earth looking for him to kill him. And so he's like you were saying, Scott, it is the part where he says, it's not the part that you didn't save me. It's the part that you didn't basically avenge my death. And it's that he would have thought that the Joker taking Jason away from Bruce, because Jason, I guess, at that point saw himself as Bruce's son in a sense. And so it's like the fact that he felt betrayed by Bruce, I guess, that Bruce didn't that Bruce didn't avenge his death by killing the person who killed his son.
And then also that scene. I mean, let's just go to that scene because that is the most emotional, impactful scene in the entire movie. But there's Jason and Batman having this impassioned dialogue, and then you got the Joker with his snarky little commentary the whole time. Which I think is interesting. It's not undercutting the drama. It's just adding this sick, demented commentary to what's going on.
Because he's not, loving it.
He's loving
it. It's the sheer joy. It's the sheer joy in his voice, like, and the expressions on his face. Like he's watching a TV show. Yeah.
I mean, even to the point that at the end when Jason shoots the gun at Batman, Batman dodges the bullet and throws the batarang to jam the gun. And Joker just has that amazing – and DiMaggio gives this great performance like, you rootin' tootin', you know, son of a thing. You found a way to win and everybody loses. Because he knows the bomb is there. And it just ramps up the drama right up to the explosion.
And also, as he's doing this, as a viewer, you can't help but want to beat the crap out of him.
It's like when Jason first kidnaps the Joker and takes him to that abandoned house in Crime Alley, and he pulls out the crowbar from the duffel bag. Yeah. I'll admit, I had a sick little of good. Beat the ever-loving crap out of this guy.
Well, you know it's coming. You have to see it, but and I got to go back to the way they framed that, the way they shot that. I've read the story and how it plays out in the comic, and so, you know, I've seen it before. This made me win. Like, I was actually wincing as it was happening, because I'm like, ow, you know, I actually, like, I wanted it to happen because it's a seminal moment from the books and a seminal point in Batman history. But at the same time, I was feeling, as it was happening, like, at first I was like, okay, it's gonna happen, good, they're gonna go there, and then I'm like, you know, I felt it, like, it hurt, like, as it was happening. So it was all very well done all the way around. The other, you know, thing that I want to mention is just the two things that I want to mention, two panels that, you know, they pulled or that stood out to me, or images, not panels, because I'm referring specifically to comic books. When Red Hood and Batman are fighting on the cathedral rooftop, and the lightning strikes, that was ripped right out of the page, like, literally.
Oh, and the little flash of, like, and there's that brief, there's like one frame that's him in the Robin costume, and if you blink, you miss it, but it's there.
Yes, yeah. And so there was that scene that was right out of the comics, and the other one that I don't know if you guys noticed, but the you know, at the docks when he's chasing down the two. Or the guys in the van, and just before that, again, that gave me a Batman Begins docks scene kind of vibe to it. And it was just like, man, especially at that time in 2010, because 2008 was The Dark Knight, and The Dark Knight Rises hadn't come out yet. Even back then, I was like, man, they're just making this even better by the, like, I already love this, but the little nods to the Nolan films. Especially Batman Begins in that sequence, really added, you know, an extra level of, we're, like, not only did they pay homage to several comics, but they also pay homage to the most recent films, and I enjoyed that.
But then adding in the comic bookiness of having the Amazo robot, which Nolan would have never have done.
Oh, no, we would have never seen that with Nolan.
We would never have said that, Nolan. But that sort of marriage of, let's get a cool doc scene, but then let's throw in a comic booky thing that only going to be able to get away with an animation.
Oh, for sure. Because
Nolan could have done it like Arrow did it, by making it a boat.
Hey, I have no problem with the boat. I love season 2 of Arrow. Watch it.
Hey, I do too. That's my point.
Season 2 of Arrow was the best thing on TV in that year. I'll just say that.
I legitimately was not. I was not being sarcastic with that comment at all.
Okay, making sure. I was watching. It's like, don't. I was like, watch it. Watch it, Jordan. You're on thin ice here.
Oh, he's been on thin ice since day episode 2. For, at least for me. the one thing that I kind of sort of want to speak to that starts my list of negatives, and there's only one thing on this list for me, is the one voice that really didn't fit for me was I'm blanking on his name.
Jason Isaacs is Ra's al Ghul.
No, not even that. Although that was okay, that was kind of bland for Ra's al Ghul. But the guy from Neil Patrick Harris as Nightwing.
What, you had a problem with him as? I had no problem with him as Nightwing.
See, you know what it is. Whereas with Jensen Ackles, I didn't get a sense of this is you know Dean Winchester. When Nightwing spoke, I don't know if it's because I couldn't get it out of my mind. Maybe it's just my personal hang-up. But all I kept thinking was his role on How I Met Your Mother. And I just couldn't.
I thought you were going to say the Music Meister, Adam.
I thought you were going to say Doogie Howser, because that was my only encounter with Neil Patrick Harris.
I don't remember Doogie Howser personally. I was around. I think I was around when that was airing. I'm not.
Oh no! I am old enough. I watched that sucker live on television. Yeah, so I'm that old.
So I don't have that memory in my head. But I have what was his name? Barney in the How I Met Your Mother. I think that's his character's name. But all I could think of was that. So maybe it's just my hang up. But that was literally, and now that you pointed out Ra's al Ghul's voice, were my two problems with the film. What did anything really stand out?
While you brought up. While you brought up Ra's al Ghul, Adam, one thing I the voice didn't bother me. I didn't feel one way or another about it. I thought it was fine. But one thing that I love, one of my favorite little moments in the movie, is when Ubu comes in. I think it's Ubu who asks him, and he's like, should we go after him? And Ra's is like, don't be silly, you'd never catch him. And then you see Batman flying off in the Batwing. I'm like, that's such a Batman moment, because Ra's knows Batman so well. He's like, he knows the detective would be out of there before they could even start to begin to catch him.
And I did like one of the things I did like before I let you guys talk about your negatives, but one of the things I did like was Ra's was kind of remorseful for the role he played in all this, which is not necessarily something I'm used to with Ra's, but I'm like, all right, I dig it. You know, I to quote Aquaman.
well, Ra's does have. I mean, you know what? Because I know Scott loves Arrow, and I love Arrow too. So I do too.
What are you gonna leave me out like that? I love it too.
What
the hell is wrong with you?
Adam, no, you know how many times you crapped on season 4 of Arrow, Adam?
Yeah, because it's garbage.
No, it is not garbage.
It's not that strong, Jordan. We have to be honest with ourselves.
See, common sense at work again.
It's the weakest season, but it is not. I still think it's underrated. I still think it gets far too much crap than it more, much more than it deserves. But anyway, that's just me. I have a long defense of all the.
Jordan, I love DC, but you're sometimes an apologist at the greatest sense of the word. And God bless you for it, but go ahead, continue with your...
You know, it's funny, because you're not going to be saying that once I get in my negatives for this movie, but what I was trying to say was Ra's al Ghul, I feel like there's a parallel here to Arrow, because there's a line that Oliver has to Talia in season 5 of Arrow, where he says, after Talia's allied herself with Adrian Chase, and he says something to the effect of, your father had morals, and... whereas you've allied yourself with a madman, and he'd never do that.
Yeah.
And so you see, we sort of do see. I feel like it is. I can buy that Ra's would feel remorseful about basically bringing the Joker into the equation and winding up getting Jason killed.
Yeah,
I can see Ra's being remorseful, because you got to remember that in the comics and in the animated series, which they did a great job with this character in the animated series, and Ra's wants Batman as his heir. He wants him to marry Talia. Talia loves Bruce. So, I mean, in a way, Ra's views Batman as almost a surrogate son, or at least, you know, who he wants to be his son-in-law. So I can't imagine Ra's going, being truly hurt that he would have, even though he sees Batman as an enemy, but causing pain in a way that caused the death of an innocent, because Raish basically – Raish is kind of about this really prime – this really sort of primeval form of justice, and he can totally see how Jason dying because of his actions was the wrong thing to happen. And Raish would be – Raish, I could see being remorseful about that.
Right. Scott, let's get into. Do you have any other negatives that you want to bring up?
The only thing is, as much as I love Jason Isaacs, I mean he's a great actor. He was fantastic as
He's great on Star Trek Discovery, by the way.
I have not seen that because I don't have CBS All Access, but I love him in the Harry Potter movies.
Yes,
as adult Malfoy, and I just found his performance as Raish just kind of flat. Like, there's not a lot there. And once again, I will admit, coming from my own personal – I mean, David Warner is the voice that I hear when I hear Ra's al Ghul. So it's not – but it's not just David Warner bias. It's also just – I couldn't tell you that was Jason Isaac talking. You know, it was like there was just so little personality in the voice.
Yeah.
That, and I'm not sure if that has to do with the way the character was written, but of all the vocal performances, Raish was like – is my bottom tier of the voices in this movie. And to frankly be honest, as far as negatives go, that's about where, that's about where my negatives stop for this movie, because I love this movie. And I wanted to say, when you were kind of being down on Neil Patrick Harris, I have to say though, he has one of my favorite lines in the movie.
Well, his lines are great. Yeah.
I mean, when they're fighting Amazo and he starts shooting like what you know is the heat vision, because it's like Superman's in this universe, and he just goes lasers. He's got lasers.
Yeah. Or when they're going to the car, and Batman's like, "Let's go," and he's like, "Can't you just say let's go to the car? Or get in the car." That was
Can you just say get in the car?
Yeah, that was great. It was good. But before I get to you, Jordan, I want to say that I think that we should all just clear up the different pronunciations we have about Roz by just giving it to the way Bizarro pronounces him or calls him. And if you've ever read the story Trinity by Matt Wagner.
Yes, I love Trinity by Matt Wagner.
It's great. He calls Ra's al Ghul Ra's or Cool. So from now on, whenever we have anything with Ra's al Ghul in it, I'm just going to defer to that because that's awesome.
Hey, I go back to the fact that according to Arabic, both of them are legitimate pronunciations of the word because they have different meanings.
Okay.
Did you know this?
I didn't know this.
Yes, I can't remember which is which, but whether you say Ra's al Ghul or Ra's al Ghul, the translation is head of the demon. But depending whether you say Ra's or Ra's, one means the literal head, as in the actual like body part head. Okay. The other one means head as in leader.
Okay.
Like if you say you're head of the organization. So that's the subtlety in whether you say Ra's or Ra's in Arabic.
Okay. Cool. So we're all right.
And I like that arrows split the difference in that they sometimes some people pronounce it Ra's and some people pronounce it Ra's on there. So I think
they were just like F it. We're just whatever comes out of your mouth, just go with it.
No, an arrow, it makes sense. Everyone who's like Western, like American, calls him Ra's. Everyone who works for the League of Assassins calls him Ra's.
There's
some consistency in like who you belong to and how you pronounce the name.
There's consistency in arrows and consistency. That's awesome. Jordan, what are your negatives?
Oh boy! You see, I told you. You called me a DC apologist earlier,
well,
and
listen,
that
you enjoy Batman and Robin and Catwoman. I don't need to say anything else.
That pretty much discounts anything you're about to say. So go ahead and say it.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I can accept that. I can accept that. But I think you might. I think you might be about to rescind that title. After what I'm going to say about this movie.
All right, go ahead.
There's a lot that I like about this movie. There is. And like I talked about a lot of it before, as we were discussing it. I think that I'll reiterate again, because I don't want people to think that I hate this movie, because I don't. I love, the voice cast is just phenomenal for the most part. Bruce Greenwood and, John DiMaggio, as I talked about, of course, Smallville alum. And one thing I was going to point out before that I forgot to point out, that I think is just – it's really funny. He played Jason Teague on Smallville, and now he played Jason Todd in this movie. So to Jason Tease.
I'm pretty sure you just wanted to mention Smallville again, but it's all right. I'll allow it. Go ahead.
So that's phenomenal. I love the tone and aesthetic of this movie. I love a lot of – there's a lot of really great emotional beats in the movie. There's that brutal scene we talked about at the beginning. There's the scene that, just like Scott was talking about, it always makes me tear up at the end too, the flashback with Jason. Great stuff in this movie. There really is. I have a fundamental issue with this entire movie, though. And this is something I've talked about on the show a lot, and it's my issue. You know what I'm going to say, don't you, Adam?
Sorry, you're like a broken record. Go ahead.
Resurrections are a trope of the superhero genre that I cannot stand. I can't. They take away the impact of the death originally, and they reduce the stakes of future deaths going forward. And particularly when it comes to Jason Todd, here's the thing. I find the psychology of a Batman that has lost a Robin fascinating. You look at the stories that have explored that. You look at A Lonely Place of Dying. You look at The Dark Knight Returns. You look at Batman Noel. You look at, frankly, Batman v Superman. I know it's not a comic, but a film. That all of these are things that explore what Batman's like after he has lost a Robin. That is infinitely more interesting to me than a Batman who's all of a sudden seen this Robin that he's lost been resurrected. Now, I think there's ways, if you want to bring Jason back, I think the way Hush did it is brilliant. I think have him be Clayface, have that immediate impact of Batman seeing Jason again. You can still get that, but you don't lose the impact of his death initially, and you don't reduce the stakes going forward. Bringing back Jason in the comics, and then obviously the movie did it too, so factoring in the movie as well, I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that I think it's just a huge mistake. I don't know what I was going to say, the biggest mistake of what, but I think it's a huge mistake. And the whole movie obviously hinges on this. So for me, that just – it takes away so much from this movie, because the whole movie I'm thinking, man, I just wish they didn't make that choice. And it's like, well, you wouldn't have this movie if they didn't. But it's like at the same time I'm like, it just frustrates me. And that's honestly my biggest issue with this whole movie.
I don't know what to say to that, because I love the Red Hood as a character.
Yeah.
So I'm glad they brought Jason back.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
Like I said, the whole idea in the comics of it was right before Infinite Crisis, and they used Superboy Prime punching the continuity wall to bring him back. I thought that was dumb as all get out.
Yeah.
But this movie, when Judd Winnett got to go back and kind of rewrite it, I mean, this movie set up the new origin for Jason's resurrection that they then carried forward into the New 52, which was the whole idea. Now in the New 52, it was Talia put him in the Lazarus pit because she wanted to give something back to her beloved. But I thought it was cool
How's that for an anniversary gift, by the way?
Yeah.
Here's
your dead ward. But I mean, resurrections are what I think still is impactful is he lost that Robin. That Robin was gone for 10, 20, almost 30 years. Close to 30 years.
Yeah.
And then the idea of what did I get back? Like, where did I go wrong? Like, and that's what this movie addresses is, was Jason always like this? I say that's what I find interesting about his resurrection. It's not just that he's back. It's that he's back and Batman's struggling with questions of, is he damaged? Was it the Lazarus pit that did this to him? Or was he always this way and I just didn't do enough to stop this?
Well, what are the stakes of Batman's mission at that point? I mean, one of the things that is so poignant about Jason's death is that it really reinforces, you know, the stakes and the danger that comes along with what Batman is doing and what his crusade and what all these people.
Also argue that A Lonely Place of Dying eliminated the stakes by the time he takes on a new Robin.
Yeah.
I mean, because that was a cool thing in the comics where you saw him going in an emotional spiral after Jason's death, and it was Tim Drake coming in the comics saying, "Dude, you need a Robin, because you're not healthy by yourself." And so, you know, even the comics kind of got him over that, to the point that Jason just became something of a background memory. Like, it was always a, hey, I lost this Robin once. And I still don't think that, because the way Jason, it wasn't like Jason faked his death. I mean, he was dead.
Yeah.
And it was the Lazarus Pit. So, I mean, yes, the Lazarus Pit's always there in the DC universe to bring somebody back. But the point is, but there's still consequences when you bring, like, Jason coming back as the Red Hood shows there's even consequences to bringing somebody back that way.
That's true. And I said it on another episode that hasn't aired yet, but I'll reiterate it here. I can't stand the Lazarus Pit in general. I think one of the smartest things Nolan ever did was – Adam knows where I'm going with this.
Here we go.
Removing the Lazarus Pit from his version of the League of Shadows mythology and having Ra's al Ghul immortal in another way, and how he returns in Rises in a vision that Bruce has, and sort of how Nolan. I love the way Nolan took that aspect of the mythology, improved it, while still respecting the idea of Ra's al Ghul. And so for me, I'd be happy if that's like what they went, if that's what wound up being the status quo when it comes to Ra's al Ghul, is the elimination of the Lazarus Pit in general. And I don't like the Lazarus Pit.
Thank God you're not in charge of DC Comics. Here's the thing. I'm with Scott on this. Obviously, you know, you already know that I think your stance on Resurrections is – I mean, I get your point. I just don't agree with it. But the reason why I would be unhappy if they never brought him back is there's this great book right now in Rebirth. It's called Red Hood and the Outlaws.
The Outlaws? Yes, that's a fantastic book.
It's one of the best books. And Batman is still dealing with the repercussions of that, because the back of his head – he always blames himself, like he puts the blame on himself for Robin's death. He doesn't outright blame the Joker. It's I didn't train him well enough. I should have never let him be Robin, or I should have saw this coming in his personality. So Batman will always carry that blame and that guilt along with him. And Batman, the thing that drives Batman's mission to me has always been the fact that preventing other children from having to witness their parents dying. That's always been at the core of Batman's mission. And that doesn't change, regardless of whether Jason Todd returns from death or not. So that's my take on it. Is that any other negatives, Jordan? Or can we wrap this up with a rating?
I think we can wrap this up. I mean, that's really my main. And I already brought up the thing. I wasn't real – for me, though, in terms of acting, my only real criticism was Black Mask. So I already brought that up. So, I think we're good.
The other thing I forgot, and we'll get to the rating right after this, is the score for this was fantastic.
Oh, it's Christopher Drake. I mean, he was my favorite composer on these animated movies. The only score of his that I would rank above this one, because I think it's still his greatest, was when he did Dark Knight Returns. Yeah. I think that is just the one for all the marbles as far as scores on this on these animated films, but it's still a Christopher Drake score, and I think he's a fantastic composer on these films.
Yeah,
are aspects of the Dark Knight Returns one that remind me a lot of the Under the Red Hood one.
Under the Red Hood came first, so
yeah, that's what I'm saying. The Dark Knight Returns reminds me.
Yeah.
That score reminds me of this one.
Yeah, there are definitely echoes to it for sure. So, Scott, the way we rate things on this show is you can do it one of two ways. You can either give a letter grade like Jordan, or one of our previous guests basically gave us a out of 10 scale, but related to something that you've seen in the movie. Like, so for Justice League, and I always use it as an example because Jordan liked my rating on this. I gave Justice League 7.5 Henry Cavill porn mustaches out of 10. You could do something similar, just apply it to this, to something you saw in this movie, or you could do a straight up letter grade. So with that in mind, what would be your grade for this film?
10 out of 10 crowbars for this movie.
Yeah. I'm going to echo that because Scott stole my thing. It's 10 Joker crowbars out of 10 for me for this one. Jordan?
Alrighty. I'm sorry, guys. I know Scott said this is number one in terms of the DCU AOM line for him For me, I don't even think it cracks the top 10 in terms of that line.
He puts Batman and Harley Quinn probably somewhere up there. I'm sorry. No, that just never.
Yeah, whatever. That's Can I say something right here?
I don't even have to pay them to blow you up. He's going to do it on his next episode voluntarily. It's great.
Yeah. Batman and Harley Quinn is indeed very high on that list. Uh-huh. I have a feeling that because I just feel like I should say this because we just got a new clip. I know we didn't talk about it on the show, but we just got a new clip for this movie. I have a feeling that Batman Gotham by Gaslight is not only going to wind up being my favorite entry in the DCU AOM line, but my favorite entry. My favorite DC animated film of all time.
That's hard for me because Mask of the Phantasm is my number one favorite.
But I will say, Gotham by Gaslight looks pretty damn good.
It looks very good. Oh no, I'm hoping for at least a top 10. If not creeping into my top 5.
For me, it's like, okay, the comic is already one of my favorites ever. Then you throw in Selena Kyle and it looks like we're going to get some Batcat moments in this movie and it looks like they're going to explore that. Oh, why is that a problem for me to mention this?
This millennial speak. I don't get it.
It looks like we're going to get some great moments of them in this movie. And so adding that storyline into what was already a great story to me just makes me even more excited. And, of course, we've got Bruce Greenwood, who obviously we just all waxed poetic about regarding this movie and his performance in it. We've got him returning again. So I'm so excited for Gotham by Gaslight, and I think that it could wind up being my all-time favorite. But getting back to my rating for this movie is... I'm floating back and forth between a B minus and a B, but I'm leaning B minus.
Well, folks, Jordan is crazy. I recommend if you all want to send me a crowbar, we'll take care of that live on the show. But in a future episode. No, I'm kidding. Scott, what we do now is let's do the social media plugs. Where can people find you online?
Okay, well, if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I can be found at ScottDC27. You can also reach the Suicide Squadcast on Twitter, at Suicide Squadcast. You can also find our show and our entire network at www.suicidesquadcast.com. You can also find us on Facebook and YouTube, and we are on Patreon. So we are pretty much anywhere you want to try to find us online.
And it is a phenomenal show, guys. I will give them a plug. There's five that I listen to, and the Suicide Squadcast is definitely, it's every week it comes out. I gotta listen to it right away. There's no delaying. And I binged it for a good year because I was behind, so I binged your guys' show and.
It's so funny to me to hear people say that. It's like, we're news. Like, by the time you're hearing this, it's like, it's literally old news when you listen to our shows.
But it was funny. I think it was over last holidays when I did the bit, like last year, this time around, where I started the binge. So I went pretty fast and furious, to quote another franchise. But Jordan, if people want to yell at you about your insane rating of this film, where can they do that?
You know what I want you to talk about with me on Twitter, because Adam apparently won't let me talk about it on the show, is Batcat, because
I got nothing against Batcat. It's just you bring it up at an excessive level of ridiculousness.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know what? That's because it warrants it. That's because it warrants how much I talk about it. And I'm still just on Twitter 3 weeks later, still. My timeline is filled with talking about Batman Annual Number 2.
No. Haven't even gotten to it yet.
Okay,
No spoilers.
No spoilers, Scott. Yeah, you're
Scott,
good.
I'll tell you this. You're going to love it, I think.
Okay. Well, I've heard things, but I am so flipping behind. I mean, I'm back to August in my comic books right now. At least my DC ones. So trust me, I'm hoping the holidays give me a chance to get caught up. I'm so bad. We have a DC Comic Squad cast. I haven't listened to a show
it's
20
a good
episodes.
Show, Scott. You should definitely tune in at some point.
You know what? If I could read the freaking comic books, I would love to listen to it.
I'll tell you, you got something to look forward to, Scott, because this is the most beautiful comic book I've ever read, is Batman Annual Number 2. You really have something to look forward to.
I've been hearing wonderful things, so I can't wait to read it once I read everything else.
Yeah, he's got a lot of reading to do. He's got a stack. So Jordan,
yeah, I feel you, man.
Where can these people talk to you?
Yes, yes. Come talk to me about Batcat. Come talk to me about Smallville. Come talk to me about all that stuff. All that stuff that I'm not allowed to talk about on Multiverse Musings. Come talk about it with me on Twitter.
Folks, he makes me look like the bad guy. It's not that he's not allowed to talk about it. He's going to get plenty of chances throughout the year, in the coming year, to talk about Smallville and Batcat and all that stuff. And he's forcing – folks, you people, just before we let you go, before I give my plug, I did a poll recently asking if people wanted us to review Batman Forever, Batman and Robin, and Catwoman, because I wanted to leave it at Batman Returns and move on. But I thought, let me see what the audience wants, and depending on what they say – we'll give them what they want. And you people clearly want to torture me. So there will be a review of Batman Forever, Batman and Robin, and a ridiculous Catwoman movie coming up in 2018. So if you want to hear me moan and cry about having to do that, you can find me at Superhero Sci-Fi. Scott, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I never gave my handle.
Still, get to it. Let's go. Like, come on, man. You're derailing the show. Let's pick it up.
Okay, Twitter and Instagram at BatFanJordanV. Also, because before we forget, we are a member of the Batman Podcast Network. So if you want to find other Bat-tastic podcasts like the Suicide Squadcast, which of course is on there, you can go to BatmanPodcastNetwork.com. And also, we want to solicit some iTunes reviews. So if you like what you're hearing, or if you don't like what you're hearing, either way, we'd love to hear from you. If you leave us a review on iTunes, we'll read it on the show, and we really appreciate it.
And so back to what I was saying before Jordan took an hour to give his rating. Scott, thanks for coming on. We had a lot of fun with it, and we hope you enjoyed it. And we hope that one day we can get you back in 2018, because it's the year of Aquaman, and If you, because we promised our listeners that we'd do more comic reviews as well, so maybe we'll check back with you and find out which ones you're caught up on, and we'll review some of those, and we'll have you back if that's cool with you.
Oh wow, that you're taking your life in your own hands if you expect me to get caught up in my comic book reading.
No, we'll pick where you are at that point when I contact you. That's
we'll okay. Well, I would be more than happy to. I have had a lot of fun here tonight talking about literally one of my favorite Batman movies of all time. It's wonderful to be here.
It's been a blast, Scott. Thank you.
And I want to wish a happy new year to both Jordan and to Scott and to all our listeners out there. Thanks for listening, and we will see you in 2018, the year of the DC streaming service and Aquaman.
So and a Batcat wedding.
Oh, for God's sakes. So long, everybody.
Happy New Year.